Our scripture this morning comes from 1 Corinthians chapter 13. I don't know what could be more appropriate today. Verses 4 through 7. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love is not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices in the truth. It bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things. Thank you.
Oh, is there more? Sorry.
Thank you, Jean. 1 Corinthians 13:13. And now faith, hope, and love abide, these three. And the greatest of these is love.
Now.
The punchline. Thanks, Kathy.
And Mitchell and Julia. Wow.
I told Mitchell I wanted him to play really, really loud, so when the bass part comes up, the flute kind of tempers it out a little bit. Happy Mother's Day. You know, this is not a part of the liturgical calendar, right? If you Google it or Wiki it or whatever, you will find that Anna Jarvis started this day. She started working on it in about 1905, but in 1908, she held a memorial for her mother, Ann Jarvis. Ann Jarvis was a peace activist. And she treated soldiers of both North and South after the Civil War. In 1914, Woodrow Wilson signed a proclamation designating the second Sunday as Mother's Day. Alas, Anna Jarvis grew to resent the commercialization of Mother's Day. I honored Anna Jarvis this year with my Mother's Day for Mary Louise. When she got up this morning, there was a post-it note on the edge of where she looks first when she gets in the kitchen. It said, "Happy Mother's Day," in our little secret love code left over from pager days, 143. And there was a triple rose in one of our glasses from the garden. So, sweetie, I didn't really forget. I just wanted to honor Anna Jarvis without spending a whole bunch of money and commercializing it. Why? Do you think she bought it? While we must acknowledge that it's not liturgical, it is important. We must acknowledge that the celebration of Mother's Day brings for some not joy but pain. Mustn't we acknowledge that? For all sorts of reasons. My mother was not a caring mother, and I had trouble with mother all through my life. Later, I was to figure out, after I had studied long and hard, that my mother was an undiagnosed depressive person her whole life. She suffered from clinical depression, but never knew it. We just thought she was moody and hard to get along with. My mothering came from my grandmother, Mom. Mom was everybody's mom. Mom loved me dearly. I was one of 10 grandchildren, but she loved me best. I was the one that she had to raise, so she had to love me best. But for those of you for whom Mother's Day is not a time of joy and excitement, I share that with you. for those mothers who have lost children, or for those of you who have lost mothers, I share that with you. And secondly, today, I want to keep my promise made posthumously to Crazy Chuck, my cousin, and his mother. Every year, I need to bring this forth on Mother's Day. Some of you will remember Crazy Chuck, and some of you will not. Crazy Chuck was born, in one song it might have been put, he was a bad seed. He got in trouble from the get-go. We used to hate to see Crazy Chuck come to visit because he would steal all my toys. He was about 4 years older than I was. He stole, he lied, he cut school. When he was 17, he was working in a filling station, and he held up the filling station owner with his own gun and took off, and he got caught. Crazy Chuck was smart in some ways, but he was terribly stupid in other ways. He spent the next 20 years in and out of prison. Just one felony after another. Until something stuck. There were only two constants in his life this whole time. One was the love of my grandmother, Mom. And the other was the love of his mother, Omega. Her name was Lois Omega. But I'm from Lubbock. So she was Omega. Aunt Omega was, they named her Omega. You can guess why. She was to be the last child in my grandmother's lineage until little Jimmy came along. But I digress. They never gave up on Chuck. They should have. They should have. They would visit him. They would write him. They never, ever gave up on Chuck. And finally, something hit. When he was about 35, he was in prison, and he had gotten underwater welding certificates in prison. He had gotten photography certificates in prison. He got his GED. He was working on a degree in who knows what, and he discovered nursing. Chuck finished his nursing studies in prison. How he ever got a job, I'll never know. But some little hospital out by Snyder or somewhere out there needed him badly because they didn't have a nurse. And Chuck went to work as a nurse there, and for the next 20 years built such a reputation that by the time he was 60, he was one of the nation's most renowned cardiac emergency room, operating room nurses. He went around giving seminars in cardiac nursing. I still didn't trust him. Now, that's not true. By that time, I didn't have any more toys for him to steal. But it was a mother's love that saved Chuck. If you're here next year, you'll hear it again. I do want to recommend Paul's definition of love to you. And think of when you hear those words, think of your own mothering in your life. Love is not patient and kind. It's not jealous or boastful, not arrogant or rude. Love doesn't insist on its own way. It's not irritable. It is not resentful. It never rejoices in the wrong, but always rejoices in the right. It bears everything, it believes everything, it hopes everything. That was the definition of my Aunt Omega when it came to Chuck. Love never, ever, ever, ever gives up. Love thinks first of the beloved. When I'm counseling with young people thinking about marriage or thinking about being in a permanent relationship, I tell both of them, the only way that this will work is that if the interests of your beloved are more important to you than your own interests. It's the only way it will work. For you see, if you both have that attitude, I think that's the definition of win-win, isn't it? Love builds up. It does not tear down. Love is creative, not destructive. In fact, I believe that so much. I believe that love is at the core of the creative work of God. Remember that James Weldon Johnson beautiful sermon? It said, God stepped out and he hurled a world. I love that line. But for me, it's that creative loving that is the work of God. And that brings me to my last and perhaps my most controversial point. Okay. Consider today's sermon title, A Mother's Love. Okay? If you hear that sermon title in a sermon, what might you think it refers to? A mother, right? Yeah. Okay. Okay, let's fast forward to Father's Day. And I've got a similar sermon, and the sermon title is A Father's Love. And we're sitting out here, good believers. What might we think that sermon title refers to? It could refer to fathers, couldn't it? It could also refer to all at once. Yeah. If on Father's Day my sermon title is A Father's Love, to whom am I referring? You don't know. It could be fathers. It could be God. But on Mother's Day, you assume that it's mothers. Question. Why do we refer to God as Father and not as Mother? Well, yeah, the prayer. Our Father who art in heaven. It's because it's biblical, isn't it? I mean, no one can argue that fact. Except stuck back in there in the middle of Isaiah, there's this little bitty passage, I will nurture you like a mother. Comfort you as a mother. Why is God called Father all the time in the Bible? We have a winner. Because in Bible times were a completely male-dominated culture in every way, with a very few notable exceptions. You remember Deborah in the Judges? Deborah was a judge during the time before the kingdom of Israel. She was a leader, the leader in Israel. Whoa. And you remember our little cat, Dorcas? Dorcas, Tabitha, she was a leader in the early church. In fact, in some of our manifestations of the church now, Dorcas is a saint because she did so much work for the poor. And why do we understand God in those terms? Because I think, stay with me here before you get up and run out. Because our understanding of God is limited by our finite brains and our finite language. Moses was getting close. You remember when Moses was getting marching orders from God and he was going to go out and he was going to go back to Egypt? And Moses was kind of shaken. He said, because there were a lot of other gods at the time. You remember that was the time of the of polytheism. There, every village, every big tree had a god associated with it. And Moses said, who shall I tell them sent me? Who shall I tell them sent me? Does anyone remember his answer? Doesn't count if you went to seminary. Yes, Tommy, I am. Tell them I am has sent you. So what does that mean to you? It means to me that God was telling him, I am existence. In the words of Paul Tillich, you might think, I'm the ground and source of your being. I am the Alpha and Omega, beginning and end. I am who I am, was his full answer. Okay, question. Is God a being among other beings? Toughy, isn't it? Think back to that answer. No, God is being itself. God's name is I Am. God simply will not fit into the categories that we want to put God into. That has been, I think, the church's great heresy all along, is that we've tried to build God into our image rather than letting the acclamation of Moses fill our minds. I Am has sent me. God simply will not fit into human conceit, contrived categories, male nor female. Is it correct to speak of Mother God as correct as it is to speak of Father God? I know it kind of rankles us, doesn't it? Because we're not used to hearing it. It's ironic that Jesus gives the clearest notion of the nature of God to a woman. Not only to a woman, she didn't have a good reputation, you know. She did not have a good reputation. Remember the story of the woman at the well. A woman of ill repute, despised by her own community, the Samaritan woman at the well, and Jesus tells her who he is. And then he tells her something, if possible, even more important than that. For you see, the Samaritans worshipped on a mountain. The Jews worshipped in Jerusalem. And while they were cousins, they really, really seriously didn't like each other. And he says, you worship on the mountain, the Jews worship in Jerusalem. But God is what? Spirit. And that word harkens back to the word, remember we talked about it, you'll remember this word, ruach. And it has to do with breath. And that's where the notion of spirit comes through. It literally means God is all in all. God is the life-giving force. God is spirit, and our worship must be in spirit and in truth. You've probably heard me sneak it in every once in a while during the benediction. What am I going to do? That's all I got. Happy Mother's Day.